This is a good word for all of us, and especially for those of you, those of us who are facing a mountain, a challenge of any kind. We begin in Mark 11, in verse 23, the words of Jesus. He said, "For assuredly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that those things that he says will be done," Jesus said, "he will have whatever he says." Is that a powerful promise or not? My title this morning is "Give Me This Mountain." Give me a minute or two to share what the disciples were thinking when they heard Jesus make this statement. If any man will say to this mountain, "Be removed," it shall be done. They, being Jewish people, knew very well the history of Israel, better than we know it today. When they heard Jesus say, "If any man will speak to this mountain and believe in his heart, that mountain will be removed," everybody who heard that thought back to their Sunday school or the alternative that they had as Jewish people in their day. They knew very well, when they heard Jesus say, "This mountain," the first thought that probably came to their mind, something they learned as Jewish children growing up in the temple, that one of their spiritual forefathers, Caleb, in the Old Testament, had used that phrase. And here's what they were so aware of when they heard Jesus make that statement about moving this mountain. They were well aware that their ancestors had been slaves for 400 years in Egypt under the iron hand of the pharaohs, the evil, brutal dictators in Egypt. Since that day, Egypt has been a type of bondage, a type of the world. Nothing good had come out of Egypt for God's people at that time. And then after 400 years of being a slave in Egypt, they were finally set free from Egypt, only to find themselves wandering around in the wilderness for 40 years. Now, when the disciples heard Jesus make this statement, we have it in Mark 11, 23, all of these things were in their mind. And they knew that their ancestors, while after 400 years of slavery and 40 years of wilderness wanderings, had seen so many miracles. They knew that their ancestors had witnessed the 10 plagues God sent against Egypt, but spared his own people. They knew the history that when their ancestors were in the wilderness, God kept the temperature perfect for them. Even though they were outdoors, 3 million people strong, outdoors in a wilderness, every day during the heat of the day, God would send a cloud that would cool them just fine. And then during the nighttime, when the temperatures dropped uncomfortably low, God sent a pillar of fire to keep them warm at night. Just right. They saw the miracles like that. They saw the Red Sea in front of them and Egyptian army behind them, pushing them against the sea to drown them. And they were there when they witnessed the waters parting and God's people walked across a dry riverbed to safety. And more than that, their ancestors had seen as soon as Israel had crossed the Red Sea and Egyptian army now was in the sea, the waters came back together and killed all of the enemies of God's people. The people who heard Jesus make the statement was well aware of the history. And then they knew their history well. They knew that when the children of Israel finally escaped Egypt, they were able to take the wealth of Egypt with them into the wilderness and ultimately the promised land. They were fed manna every day for 40 years. They were given water from a solid rock when they were thirsty. God provided well, and the people who were listening to Jesus that day understood the history. And yet, they were aware their ancestors had complained, and some of them actually preferred to go back into slavery than to enjoy the miracles and the provision of God. Now, early in their wilderness journey, Moses, the leader of God's people in that day, sent out 12 spies to go into the land God had promised his people. We call it the Promised Land. A lot of songs use the name Canaan Land. This was the promise of God for his people. I have a land for you. You're going to be blessed more than ever when you get to this land. And Moses sent out 12 spies and said, you go into that land and you bring us back a report, and here's what we want you to find out. He gave them instructions. See how many people are there, if there are a few of them or if there are many of them. See how strong the people are there. Check out their cities to see how fortified their cities are. How thick are the walls protecting the cities? And when you get back, tell us how fruitful the land is. You know, he sent 12 spies and 10 came back saying, no way. Oh, we can't deny how fruitful the land is. Look at these grapes. The land is flowing with milk and honey. And it's a fruitful, fertile land, but there's no way we can go there. I know God promised us that, but there's no way we can go there because we look like grasshoppers in the sight of the giants that live there. And this was their report, 10 out of 12. We are not able to go up against the people. They are stronger than we are. But 2 spies, 2 out of 12, came back with a different report. Their names were Joshua and Caleb. And in Numbers chapter 13 and verse 30, it says, then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. That's 2 different mindsets. Oh, there ain't no way. No way. Look at the giants that live there. And there was a race of giants, the Anakim. Everybody was a giant there. We look like grasshoppers. There's no way. We are not able. We are not able. How pathetic is that statement? We are not able. But then the minority, 2 out of the 12 came back and said, we are well able. Let's go in at once. Notice the difference in the mindsets. They all saw the same thing, but they came back with different reports. And Israel believed the evil report. They believed when the 10 came back and said, no way, we are not able. They believed it. And so God punished the Israelites by making them remain in the wilderness for decades longer until the doubting and the disbelieving generation had died out, except for Joshua and Caleb, the 2 who believed the promise of God. In Numbers 26 and 65, it says, for the Lord had said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. So there was not left a man of them except Caleb and Joshua. There is a benefit to believing the promise. There is a punishment for disbelieving the promise of God. Imagine an entire generation going to their graves wondering what might have been. They were paralyzed by fear and they doubted God's promise. Only Joshua and Caleb, the two spies that came back believing, we are well able to do this. Let's go in at once. They made it to the promised land. The others did not. And Joshua and Caleb led a new generation into the promise of God. Now, when they got there, they saw mountains and they saw giants living in the land that had to be defeated. And then Caleb said the boldest and the most courageous thing. In Joshua chapter 14, beginning at verse 7, Caleb said this, I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as was in my heart. Look down at verse 10. And now behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years. Ever since the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, here I am this day, 85 years old. As yet, I am as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and coming in. Now, therefore, give me this mountain. Of which the Lord spoke in that day. For you heard in that day how the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. Imagine being 85 years old and being able to say truthfully, I'm as strong today, I'm as battle ready today at 85 as I was when I was 40 years old. And while the rest are trembling in their boots and their teeth is chattering with fear, looking at that mountain, this 85-year-old faith-filled man named Caleb said, give me this mountain. I'll take responsibility for driving out the giants. I know there will be days where the weather won't be ideal. There will be days when I won't be in a good mood to get up and fight another day, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm one of the ones that said, we are well able. Let's go in and receive the promise of God. And when Jesus said to his disciples, if any man will say to this mountain. They remembered their history. They remembered Caleb, centuries early, had claimed this mountain and all the warfare that would come with it. Give me this mountain. What mountain are you facing today? What challenges is in front of you? What's standing between you and the promise of God for the better life you're waiting on? All of us are facing a mountain, and we should be saying, give me this mountain. Now, your mountain could be a crisis of some kind, a challenge that caught you off guard. You didn't see it coming. You were surprised by it. But now you have a very real challenge on your hand. It's as big as a mountain in front of you. Or your mountain could represent the dream of your life. It's such a huge mountain to climb, but there's that desire, there's that dream, there's a destiny God has promised you, and you realize, but I've got to climb this mountain in order to get to the promise God has for me. and there are giants I'm going to have to contend with. It could be that your mountain is a career change. You're unhappy with where you are, and there's a spark of faith stirring on the inside of you, and perhaps a window cracked or a door cracked, offering you an opportunity, and you're wondering, should I stay here and be paralyzed more? Or should I knock that door off the hinges and jump out of the boat and start walking on water? Is this God's best for me? The mountain in front of you may be a degree, the next degree you want to get so that you can better your life. Or it may be to start your own business. There's that something stirring in you. You know it's in you, but you've never pulled it out of you yet because of the mountain, the opposition, the resistance, the discomfort, the inconvenience. It's going to cost you if you start climbing that mountain. Or it may be a ministry, an outreach that you want to start, but the mountain looks too high and you get easily discouraged. Could be the book you want to write, the song you want to sing. It could be your commitment to lose weight and to get healthy. But I'll start tomorrow because every time I think about it, I see how big that mountain is. And I am inclined to believe the 10, the majority, who said, no way. We can't go in there. They're so big, we look like grasshoppers in their eyes. Today may be the day something changes about the mountain in front of you. Today may be the day when you say, like Caleb said, I'm able to do this. God promised me this. Give me this mountain. I'm willing to fight for the promise. Now, your giant could be a giant of addiction, cycles and patterns of behavior you've not been able to break. It could be a mountain of poverty or lack. I'll tell you what you will find on every mountain, regardless of what you call the giant living there. You will find fear on every mountain. And as long as you stay at the bottom and occasionally look up at the size of that mountain, you will deal with anxiety. You will need medication. You will either need divine healing or whatever the doctor can prescribe, because these are days when anxiety is through the roof. Do you know that? Do you know anybody been anxious lately? Because the mountain is just so intimidating. And there is a way to get out of your wilderness, but only if you're willing to conquer your mountain. Oh, it was 400 years of slavery. That was back-breaking. And then they were set free by the hand of God, but 40 years of wandering, trying to figure out, do I believe it or not? Do I take God at His promise or not? Are we able to do it or are we not? 40 years. They could have walked it in 11 days by foot. 40 years. They wandered and they were unwilling to claim their mountain. Now notice Caleb said, give me this mountain. It must become personal. Whatever the challenge is, whatever the giant you're facing, and it's a different challenge, a different giant for each of us. But regardless, it's got to become personal. Caleb said, give me this mountain. Meaning, I will assume personal responsibility for every demon, every devil, every giant, every obstacle. I'm able to do it with God's help. He promised it to me, and I'm up for it. It's got to become personal. Give me this mountain. And then it must be specific. Caleb said, give me this mountain. Oh, there are plenty of giants out there. Pick your battles. You're not meant to fight every battle. Some battles are only meant to be fought by other people. You may love those other people. You may want to help those. You may want to get in the ring and do their fighting for them. But hello, give me this one. Give me this mountain. Specific. The phrase, this mountain, is mentioned in the Bible 13 times, including the time where Jesus said, whoever says to this mountain. So Caleb knew what we must know in order to conquer the giants standing in the way between us and God's best for us, God's promise for us. And that is, claim the mountain and make it your own. Caleb looked around. All the giants living there, the landscape of the promised land filled with mountains and valleys. He picked one out and he claimed it. Give me this mountain. And he made it his life's work to defeat every giant in his way to get to the top of that mountain. You need to claim your mountain. It's yours. It's yours for the asking and yours for the taking. And here is what we are. I don't mind being in this crowd. I'm a little nuts anyway. I don't color in the circle, in the dots, in the lines always. I'll cross the lines sometimes. But I'll tell you who the people of God are and what the people of God do. We do crazy things, like we'll look at a mountain and we speak to the mountain. Now, people who are outsiders, if they see us doing that, they're going to think we're peculiar. And they're right. The Bible says we're a peculiar people. But we're a royal priesthood. And there's the power of our faith in God's promise, and there's the authority of God invested in each of us. And so there comes a time when you claim the mountain and you start speaking to it. And you say things like this to the mountain. Hello, mountain, as big as you think you are, look at me. I'm a mountain mover. Serving notice. Hello, mountain. As big as you are, I have an advantage over you because you can't get any bigger, but I'm still growing. We speak to the mountain. You say to the mountain, hello, mountain. You may think you're going to be on top forever. But what you're doing is bringing out the best in me right now. Caleb said, I know it's going to be a challenge. It's not going to be a cakewalk, but give me this mountain. I'm ready for an uphill climb. You will say things to your mountain like, hello, mountain, look at me and let me identify myself. Child of God here. Possessor of the promise of God right here. And mountain, if you can't tell by looking at me, let me inform you. There is more inside of us than we have yet released. And there has been a deposit continually being made inside my spirit just waiting on an at-once moment, and this is the day you've met your match, Mr. Mountain. You say to the mountain, hello, my determination has been at 211 degrees for a while, but you have just pushed me to 212 and I've reached my boiling point with you. You got to talk trash to the mountain. Except it's not trash. I thought Oliver was going to preach my message this morning when he started praise and worship. I said, oh my God, there's no need for me to be here anymore right now today. But I love it when God speaks. He speaks more than once in more than one way. And then here's what's required. We're people of faith, after all. When you're staring at that mountain and there are giants wanting to kill you because they're threatened now that you're trying to scale the mountain they claim as their own, and they realize, oh, who they're dealing with now, finally, after you've talked to your mountain, you have to do what Caleb did and what all of us have to do when we face giants in the way of our promise. We have to lean so far into God that we lean past our balance point. Meaning, oh my, if God were not here right now sustaining me, supporting me, I would fall flat on my face because I am leaning so far into this that I'm past my balance point. Now that's real faith. And when you get to that place, you say to the giants, get off my mountain. Not room here for you and me both anymore. Now, I'm not cocky. I hope. I'm as real as you are. But I know what it's like to face a mountain. I faced a few in my personal life. I've faced a few in my ministry and church life. You know about most of those. I know what it's like to hear a promise from God, and the first thing is a shiver and tremble, thinking, oh, no way, no way. And you have to be careful, because if you're only 99% sure, that's nowhere near enough to claim your mountain. If you think it's going to be easy, I know what it's like to hear the promise of God and give up a wonderful life, walk away from a wonderful life. I know what it's like to be afraid of the future after I've done something like that. But I also know what it's like for God to give me another life and a better life. I've done that more than once. Once leaving here, going to California. Once leaving California to come back to here. Once leaving here to go to Russia. And talk about fear. I mean, it tormented me in my mind. Anybody been tormented in your mind? Ronald Reagan had called them the evil empire and said, God, I want to move over there. Well, but Ronald Reagan just called them the evil empire. Well, I know, but give me this mountain. I know it'll be rough. I know it'll be inconvenient. But I believe with your help, I am well able, only with your help. Fear is the greatest paralyzing giant you will ever face in your life, and he claims every mountain out there. Babe Ruth said, don't let the fear of striking out hold you back. Hey, that's a good word. Not in Scripture, it's not canonized, but it's still good. The fear of striking out holds people back. And what you've got to do is reach a place to where, you know, I'm 99% sure, but oh, 99% is nowhere near enough. Oh, God. And there comes that time where you look at your mountain and you decide that you want it more than you're afraid of it. You want it more than you fear it. You want it more than you're afraid of. Now, two words Caleb said were most important. And they're the words, you're not going to like it. Especially if you're 99% or less. But he said, at once. There's an urgency. There comes a time when there's an urgency if you're going to take your mountain. If you're going to receive the promise. Time is of the essence, always. But then there is the moment of urgency. And when the 12 spies got back, 10 said, can I tell them what I told you yesterday I was going to tell them? I shouldn't or shouldn't. Huh? Anybody want to hear what I told Brenda yesterday? I told her, I said, tomorrow I'm going to talk about give me this mountain. And I preached to her before it passes her test. You don't hear a lot of what I plan to say because of her filter. But so I told her, I was just talking like I do around the house. I said, I'm going to tell them that 10 of the 12 spies came back and said, hell no. And 2 came back and said, heaven, yes. I want to be with the heaven, yes crowd.
He doesn't listen.
I do. But Caleb said, we are well able. Let's go up at once. Now, that's important. There comes a time where you do it. You do it now. You quit putting it off. You stop waiting. You get out of your anxiety and your complacency, and you stand up on the inside, and I'm running for it. And you run. You do it at once. Now, today may not be your day. Not for all of you. You know what your mountain is. You know the giant you've got to conquer. You know the victory you've got to have in order to enjoy the life of the promise of God he's made you. And you may not be ready yet. And I've already told you, if you're only 99% sure, don't do nothing yet. But there will come that moment when faith will arise to the point that you are ready to do it at once. No more mountain. Now, I'm going to tiptoe toward you. I'm going to take one step today. And I may take another one tomorrow. None of that. There comes a time when at once is the word of the Lord. At once, let us go in at once, for we are well able. And we can remember the lesson we learned from the greatest giant killer of all times, the little boy David. And you know, little boy gets in front of this giant enemy of God. And here's how David handled it. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 48, it says, David hurried and ran toward the giant. That's an at-once mindset. Oh, no more time to wait here. Can you imagine a little boy facing a giant? That huge giant? And what did that little boy do? Not tuck his tail and run the other way, but he hurried and ran toward the giant. That's how you kill a giant. You hurry and do it. Oh, yeah, there comes a time where you do it at once. I'm going to clip your fingernail and see if that offends you. And if we get along, I'm one of these days, I'm going to cut your head off. No, there comes a time where you hurry and you run toward it and you take it at once. That's a word for all of you at some point. If not today, then at some point in your future. Now here's what the enemy tries to get us to do. And he's successful a large part of the time. He gets us to camp out at the base of the mountain. Oh, we've made it to the base. Oh, we're out of slavery. And we're even out of the wilderness. I mean, we're already out. Now, here we are, but, oh, look at that mountain. I'm just going to camp out at the bottom of the mountain. And we become lethargic. We become inactive. We just settle there. We don't press any further. We just settle there. And our inaction breeds doubt and fear. But our action breeds confidence and courage. Our action breeds confidence and courage. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7 says it clearly, and this is the covenant we enjoy today. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Put that on as weapons. If you're afraid at the bottom of the mountain, trembling in your boots at the giants you've got to face in order to get to the promise God has made you for your life, this is a good part of your weaponry for your arsenal. God's not given me a spirit of fear. Some translations say a spirit of timidity or cowardice. Oh, and fear is all of that and more. But God has given me a spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. The Amplified Bible says power and of love and of sound judgment and personal discipline, abilities that result in a calm, well-balanced mind and self-control. That's a lot, but God's given us all of that. Would you stand with me, please? I want to share with you the lyrics to a song that you may know. I've known it all my life. It was written over 100 years ago. And it's too bad that the children of Israel did not know this song. It had not been written in their day. But it is for our warfare in our day. The lyrics go like this. I was once in Egypt's bondage, but deliverance came to me. And I'm living now in Canaan, for the Son has set me free. It says, I was once a slave to Satan, and he worked his will in me. But I'm bound by sin no longer.